Yeah. I moved it way up and I got longer. Boy, my glasses. All right. We are now in the second of three sections. We are in the horary section. And actually, it's horary and event astrology. And this on the board is a very broad logical structure of the subject of what we're going to be talking about. And the numbers are the order in which we are going to address things. And so we will begin with number one. Traditionally, this kind of astrology that we're looking at now is called divinational astrology. And it's probably the oldest kind of astrology that there is, because there was divination, astronomical, astrological divination before there were horoscopes. Now, to divine means to obtain information by other means than the senses, or than by reason, or by past records. Although you can bring all three into divinational astrology, as we're going to see. There seem to be two primary ways in which divination occurs. One is an intuitive focus, that you use your means of divination to focus your attention, and then you get an intuitive insight, and that intuitive insight is divine. So you have divine spiritual knowledge. The other way is psychic receptivity, in which a person places himself in a mediumistic or a passive state, a receptive state, and in that state, whatever psychic force enters in, sometimes it's valid, sometimes it's not valid, it's a bit chancy. So obviously it is much to our benefit to seek out the intuitive way rather than the psychic way. So most people like the woo-woo of the psychic stuff. I'm not very much in favor of it itself. The psychic activity is most likely devolutionary, because it is so passive, and we're at a place that we are supposed to be reaching out for things. And to let anything come into ourselves in the name of gaining knowledge can be a pretty dangerous kind of thing. So what we want to do, using sense perception as an analogy, we want to both look and see. So our process is like if we are working intuition, we're focusing our attention in such a way that we want to see, and we are looking in that way. The big problem with psychic information is you can't tell where it comes from, and you can't always tell what form it's going to come in. And in the inner worlds, there are sharks, just like there are sharks here, that would look for opportunities to take advantage of people for their own benefit, or just to be nasty. People like that here too. Now this is a big problem, because everything that comes from the higher worlds or the spiritual worlds has a feeling of truth about it. And there are people that are speaking basically gobbledygook from psychic experiences that believe that they are divine oracles or something like that. Even if you're working with intuitive divinational astrology, which the hope is, you still have to be temperate there, because it doesn't have continuity of consciousness. You get a hit, you get a few more hits, and it's an exciting thing when you get intuitive hits, so much so that you might abandon having continuous observation or other means of gaining knowledge. Many years ago, in about 1964, my first encounter with somebody that did horary astrology was with an old Norwegian lumberjack from Washington State. His name was Bert Hudson. And he says, you've got to be careful with horary astrology. And his words were, he said, it gets you in your blood. and you're hooked, and then you always want to do it. It's all right to use horary astrology for yourself if you limit it. In fact, it's almost inversely proportional to the number of times you use it. The more often you use it, the more it becomes watered down. In my life, I've probably used it 6 times, because that's about the number of significant women that I've met in my life. No, that isn't the main use that I used it for, but I can remember one horary chart saying, "Is this the one?" If I didn't know what other means. So what we're talking about here, when we're dealing with astrology, we're dealing with Neptune. And Neptune is one of the octaves, which is everywhere at the same time. And where you use it or where you place its influence is important. We have, as we've looked at before, we have the ladder of the stars, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Sun, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. What we want to do is we want to put Neptune with the Sun, right? We want to be middle of the rotors, because if you put Neptune with the Sun, then you're dealing with self-conscious use of spiritual forces. If you put it at the bottom of the ladder, you put it with Neptune, then you become a psychic with the Moon. With the Moon, you become a psychic and you become a passive, which is not good for evolution. On the other hand, if you put it at the top of the ladder with Saturn, you become a predictor and you become a commentator. And you're sort of removed. You're not a participator in things as you are at the middle of the ladder of stars. And in analogous ways, you can take any of the octaves and associate them with the different planets on the ladder of stars, and each one gives you a different kind of insight into the best use of the things run by that planet. It would seem okay to interpret any number of natural and historical events and to commentate on them, but even there you have to take care, because looking back too much is not something that happens often, but looking back too much keeps you or hampers you from moving forward. And so you don't want to be too much of an event astrologer in that way. And it's not the same thing. It's helpful. It's helpful like having a satellite out in space out of which you can bounce signals off of. And the event astrology can be used as something bounce things off the symbolic network. But when you're using a symbolic network, if you're not using it to focus your direct perception, you live in a once-removed world. That's not a healthy thing to do, so we have to be careful about the divination or the astrology of moments in that way. Now, since this is the oldest form of astrology that we know of, it has many ancient notions about it. And some of those notions are beneficial, some are not. It's not like our modern scientific representation. It's much more metaphoric. It's more like reading poetry. A good example of a divinational form that is like reading nature poetry is I Ching. Because that's something that you're looking through a set of symbols, but it reflects the nature, and it isn't unscientific, but it certainly isn't the way we think these days. Not a bad way. Now, having an attitude of reverence about all of this, since we are dealing with something spiritual, is a helpful kind of thing. Priests used to be the ones that did all of the divination. In fact, a lot of the early divination was done as part of a sacrifice. People were brought to sacrifice things that were dear to them in order to prove their connection or their willingness to give to divinity. So, for example, in the time of the Babylonians, and even in Greek times, it was a common practice that people, in thankfulness for having a year where things were, the crops were good, or they won a battle or something like that, they would sacrifice an animal. And what they would sacrifice, usually the biggest sacrifice, was the sacrifice of a bull. In fact, there were bulls that were raised primarily for that purpose. And then what they would do when the animal had been sacrificed, the priest would read the entrails of the animal, and from that would divine things. It was the science of heptoscopy, which is the science of reading the liver. And the liver, they had diagrams of the liver that were in various sections that were not greatly dissimilar from a horoscope. And they would look at these things, and they would look for certain markings and things like that, and they would get intuitive or psychic hints about the nature of things. And it's not really far-fetched, because if the liver was the thing that was used more, you don't hear people reading kidneys, but you do hear a lot of reading livers, and the liver is the great metabolizer. And so that if there is a cycle of vegetation or something like that, it's going to show up in the nature of the liver, because the liver is not only the metabolizer, it is the regenerative organ. It regenerates every 6 weeks. I think most of the cells are changed, and you have a completely different liver a year and a half later than when you started. And so, like, if you're skilled at this and you do this often, you could actually see in the nature of the liver. I'm sure the livers look a lot different now, since bulls have to deal with a lot of taking in of pesticides and hormones and things like that. And somebody who's familiar with reading livers, or this is a ghoulish subject, isn't it, would be familiar with those things. Now, since the higher worlds are to us so seemingly disorganized and chaotic, and since there was the dangerous potential of mediumship, divinational practices, including divinational astrology, had many, many strict rules and procedures meant to keep the bad spirits out and to promote concentration, especially for the promotion of concentration, which is why things like rain dances were magical acts, divinatory magical acts, in order to bring something about. And they were exceedingly careful about the way they had to be performed, and that again brought about a focused concentration and an ability to enter into finer forces behind nature with that concentration. Now, some of the rules and principles were based on the very nature of the higher worlds themselves, and some of them were based on things of this world. We aren't going to go into that. But for the practice of horary astrology, there are a lot of old rules that have been brought down from generation to generation. And if you want to be successful, it's probably a good idea to stay with the rules. Only if you have a lot of experience and you have a lot of intuition and you're not messing with something important in somebody's life, you can begin to evolve and change the rules. When you do that, it's probably best to do it in the things that are more sliding scale, which is, brings up that factor that we brought up before, scale of proportion. That's going to come up again. All right, let's go forward now. In the graphic representation we have here, we're calling it not divinational astrology, but astrology of the moment. Now, it is also called event astrology, but that's not a good designation, because the judgment of events is only part of astrology of the moment. And this side of the diagram is all the judgment of events. So let's now move into phenomenal moments. Phenomenal moments are the moments when things happen, when phenomena occur. Now, this is a very nice astrology to work with, because when an event has happened, it's a certainty, whereas a question always has uncertainty. Sometimes events are things that haven't happened yet, and then there's an element of uncertainty, but at least you're talking about an event and not a question. One of the most famous cases of event astrology is at one time the British astrologer Sir Ferry, all the British astrologers basically had pen names that they worked under. And Sir Ferry was given an event horoscope of a time and a place of something that was going to happen, and they wanted to know what would come of it. And he said that this event will not happen at this time. And they laughed at him because the event was the coronation of the king. And coronations of the king are never postponed, at least they never were until this time. It turned out that he was right. It was postponed. Since an event is a fact, you don't have to worry about if or when. Instead, you can look at how this happened or why this happened or what's behind this event. And by asking those kinds of questions is how natal astrology developed. Because a birth is a very definite event. Somebody before, there was not a living, breathing person there, and then in a moment, there is a living, breathing purpose there, and that's a really important event. And so like natal astrology is event astrology. It is what comes out of the event that we call birth. It's pretty clear. So like each part of all of this, we're going to be going through this very rapidly. We're going to talk about this only one talk. But each part of this is worth a lot of study. By asking a lot of questions is how natal astrology developed. Some questions that are questions are better worked with as events. For example, a bid is both a statement and it is a question. So if you say, if I make this bid at this time, will you accept my offer? It's both a question and a statement. A bid could be seen as a horary question, but it is not clear that everything would come out of it. But we'll come to that in a little bit. Most events are objective. They're objective because the consciousness, the personal subconscious manipulation of the medium is not possible. If you're dealing with pure divination and you're dealing with yarrow sticks or coins or tarot cards or something like that, there's always the effect of the personal subconscious of the person who touches the items. If an event has happened, that is obviated immediately. Or if a question is asked, the onus is on the person asking the question, but what's in the sky can't be manipulated in the same way that coins or tarot cards or things like that. There is, in the writings of Carl Jung, there's a study of where he tried to get around to make an astrological study be completely objective, but he did, with a lot of study, he found out that there was subjectivity and that was behind the selection of a large number of charts, and he had to admit this is really very hard to do, because any time that the person comes in contact with things, even if you have a stack of horoscopes and you pull some of them out, you're entering into that as a medium, and you can change that with your subjectivity. Now, since the future is not completely determined, that's a really difficult question, and people who study cause and consequence and destiny often have a lot of strong opinions about this. I can remember arguing with a Taurus at one time about whether the outcome of that basketball game is determined before the basketball game even begins, and that just playing the game out is just a matter of playing it out. And running into a Taurus that was a really dead strong karmic person, you know very well you were her succedent, and she believed, you know, we might as well not even play the game. Now it's an interesting thing. If you look at these people, what do they call them? Remote viewers. They have their schools in Las Vegas, and they have people come and rent hotel rooms in Las Vegas and pay for this expensive training in becoming a remote viewer. And the person in charge of the school says, that's all right, they make their money back by sports betting anyway, because they know who's going to win the games before the games are played. I don't know what to say about that. I think some of destiny is that way and some of it is not. Because it's very clear that sometimes there is a game and it will be a hotly contested game, and then some fluke event will happen. And when the fluke event will happen, it's very decisive after that. We'll talk about some of those kinds of events later on. And that's decisive to the whole thing, and it is as if it were played out. And in some cases, that even gets into the psychology of the players. But in some cases, it's very clear that it's not the case. Well, of course, the people on the other side will say, yes, but you can look into the ethers and you can see somebody from the winning team receiving the trophy before the game is even played. In some cases, maybe, but in some cases, maybe not. I don't think it's a healthy notion to believe that everything is written out and you're just going through the motions as if it were a rehearsal. This is reality. You live out reality as if it's real and as if your actions have some meaning to them. You're not just, going through the steps. All right, but that's all aside. We're way in. So, the form of projecting forces into the future, from an event can be specific or it can be general. Specific things point to specific future events or specific people. General projections are more like forecasts, saying, well, something of this order is more likely. And those are things that happen when you're dealing with phenomena and working from them. The judgment of any event, well, I hope you get to judge more events than horary questions, is likely to be important depending on the significance of the event. And there are several factors that are important to determine whether an event is significant or not. Relevance. Yes, when Barack Obama got elected president, that's distantly relevant to my life, but it's that event is much more relevant to his life and to the people that he's going to come directly into. So the matter of relevance, like for me to wonder about what's going to be the outcome of a provincial election in China, is, you know, that kind of event is not important. Clarity. An event is significant if it's clear, if it's decisive. This is why in a lot of event things, terminal events, births and deaths are considered about as clear-cut as can be. You know, one moment somebody's living and breathing, and the next moment they're not. And another is the intensity of the event. Like if it's a really strong event, and it can't be denied that this event really took place, like an earthquake or something like that, that's something that determines relevance, that determines the significance of an event. Now, when you decide whether you're going to study an event or not, and you have decided that it is a significant event, the relevance of doing that also has several factors. Responsibility. If you are responsible for something involved in this, and it isn't just idle curiosity, that is a more likely reason for studying an event. Because if you have nothing at stake and it's all just academic, don't do it. You know, there's a certain responsibility. And sensitivity. Whether you're sensitive to the issue and whether you're sensitive to all the information there is important. It's a hope that most astrologers have a high degree of sensitivity as well as a high degree of intuition. And power. A lot of people study events and things that they do not have the power to do anything about. It was a time, this comes from personal experience, there was a time that I used to make predictions, political predictions, things like that about the nature of the world. And one time, I was spending a lot of time doing it, and I had a reasonable, good accuracy to it, but one day it just came to me, and this little small voice within said, "What are you doing predicting events that you can't do anything about?" You know, it's just, it's vanity. That's what happens when you put things on the Saturn, Neptune, and the ladder of the stars. It's vanity. You can't do anything about it. Now, some events are illusory. Some seem like they might be important, but really aren't. And some of events are really hard to get at. One thing is a meteorological event, weather. To be able to study the astrology of weather is an enormous study. You all know Charles MacDonald, who spent all of his life studying both astrology and meteorology, and he's put hours and hours and hours in. There must be at least 30-some years now that he's been doing it, and he still feels like he's just barely beginning to understand some of the factors, both from the meteorological side